Willkommen zum Faster You Podcast, wo sich alles um Ausdauersport und Training dreht. Hier geben euch Sebastian Schlurike, Björn Kafka und Niklas Hanker wertvolle Tipps und Einblicke, die euch helfen, eure Performance auf das nächste Level zu bringen.
So, good morning, a new episode of the Faster You Podcast. Today only with me, Björn Kafka, because Niklas is on a photo shoot. And we have a guest, not from Germany, as you can hear. It's Raúl Celdran from Spain. I hope I pronounce your name right. Yeah, somehow.
Quite good, yeah.
And I know him for quite some time. He's working for Caja Rural as a nutritionist, I think, and as a coach for the mountain bike Climatiza team. He also works with Javier Solá with the company Nature Training System, is it right?
Yeah, I mean, this is my company. Javier has his own company, but we have like an academy for coaches all together, yeah.
Yeah, so that the people get to know you a little bit better, what's your background?
My background was maybe a little bit different of what people can expect. I did my study of pharmacy very, very long time ago. I end up my studies in 2000, so it's a long time. And then maybe 15 years ago, because I personal transformation, I start using a lot of the sports and the bike. And I had to prepare a very long Gran Fondo in Spain called Quebranta Huesos. And because I was working as a pharmacist in a chemist, I only had very, very little time to train. Only an hour and during the day, and a lot of time for Sundays. And I started to study. There must to be a way to increase the performance or the outcomes that I get from a very little time. So I start study, and then, did a lot of courses. Lately, in 2018, I did a master's degree in master's in high performance for endurance athletes, which changed my life in the University of Murcia. And then everything came on top of that. Start coaching some guys. I did a master's in 2004 about nutrition.
Crazy.
Some business of nutrition for getting diet, for losing weight, for woman, and from that, studying and talking with people like you and knowing a lot of people and working and studying a lot and start working with friends and then and I got up to here. I don't know how.
it's nice. Yeah. Raúl and I, we are working a little bit together with the Climatiza team.
Yeah.
Where I coach one of the riders, Mark Stutzmann. And we're also having our friend Javier Solá. I mean, like, he's more a friend of you. I know him a little bit from work. Yeah. From UAE. So today I want to talk about nutrition, because I think that's one of your expertise, and you have many of these. And because we're always talking about it, how sometimes complicated it is for the riders to eat right, and even it should be clear, but they are always doing some mistakes, and we want to put some light on that. Yeah. So maybe the first question is already like super big. Yeah. And try to limit yourself. So if you can break it down, what are the fundamental nutritional principles you recommend for endurance athletes during training days? And also compared to racing. Yeah. So what should someone eat when it's normal day, race day, even a rest day, and what in racing?
Well, it really depends on the intensity and the goal of the workout. The athletes has to bear in mind that even more important than what you eat on the bike is what you have eaten the previous, 24, 36 hours. And then what's the goal for your next workout? Because if I do a workout today, mid intensity tempo. I have to eat, I don't know, 80 grams per hour or whatever. The most important thing is thinking, what do I have to do tomorrow? Yeah, is it a rest day? Is it a high intensity? Is it a race maybe? So you have to think in what you have eaten yesterday, what's the goal for today's workout, and maybe most important, or a very important thing, what you are going to do tomorrow or the day after, yeah? And based on that, just do different, approaches.
Yeah, before we started recording, you told me that most of the, or a lot of the athletes, if you track the nutrition, they actually have the protein intake is quite okay. The fat is maybe a little bit too high sometimes. And a lot of athletes still have the problem with eating carbs, especially not on the bike, but before and after the bike. So they actually skip carbs. So what's your opinion on that? Yeah.
Yeah, that's correct, Bjorn. Is until you don't tell them the importance or what they have to eat. What I find normally, even with professional riders, is the protein. Sorry to correct you, but sometimes they tend to eat a lot of protein, more than enough or recommended the amount or recommended, which for myself is 2 grams per kilo per day, more or less. The fat, if you don't monitor the fat, it can be very, very little if or very high, because you get a bunch of nuts or hazelnuts, or in Spain we use olive oil a lot, and that's very good and very healthy, but it's a fat, so if you don't measure the olive oil, 1 gram of fat is 9 kilocalories. If you don't measure the olive oil, you can use 50 grams or 100 grams in a day, which is almost 1,000 kilocalories and that's not needed. So yes, probably until a nutritionist doesn't start working with an athlete, many times they don't realize the importance of having the macros right and the timing of the macros right, not only on the bike, but also before and after.
Yeah, and there's this nice study. I talked about that a few weeks ago on another podcast. It's a Spanish study. I think it's from 2023. I have to look up who did it. And they did a nice study about nutritional intake, carbohydrates, after training. And so they had the same amount of carbs in 24 hours, but one group eat most of the carbs immediately after the training, and the other group just mix it a little bit. So they have a delayed effect. And so the next day training, even if they took the same amount of carbs, the group that eat the carbs directly after training performed way better. Yeah? So skipping carbs after training is, you will mess with the training the next day. Yeah? So keep that in mind. Yeah, I think this is a very good study. I will link it in the show notes. I really like the study.
Please, this to, they have to think that the 3-4 hours after a workout or a race are probably the most important hours to get the carbs in, because they are, I don't want to use very technical words, just the legs are like open, or the muscle in the legs are open, and you can store a lot of glycogen during those first 2 to 4 or 5 hours.
Yes. How do you approach the nutrition throughout the season? Yeah, I mean, like, you're not always eating a lot and carbs, and you have an off season. Sometimes you have just base training. Is there some difference in the nutrition also in terms of maybe losing weight and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, not only losing weight, but gaining weight, because I work with some very, very tiny, climbers, under 55 or so. During the base period, I probably the most important thing is the weight management. So if an athlete has to lose weight, during those 3-4 months is the best way to, or the better time to lose weight or increase weight. Because when you are building or peaking or in during the race period, is you cannot mess around with the nutrition. So for base period, probably weight management is the most important. Then in the build period, if we call it build or whatever, probably the good training and practicing the race strategies for eating carbs is probably the most important thing. And then when they are peaking on during the race period, is the performance is the key for the nutrition. So I would say three parts: weight management in the first part, practicing and training the gut and the stomach in the build, and performance in peaking or racing. That's how we'll separate it.
If you go to the racing, training the gut, I mean, like, we now have actually a pretty good time, and I think a lot of performance can be explained by the high carbohydrate intake. If I do simulations with it, I already can see, okay, if someone is not taking carbs, or when I was racing, like, 25 or even 30 years ago, we hardly ate. I mean, like, we just did 6-hour rides, and you ate an apple, and that was enough. I mean, which was totally crazy. So today we often hear about athletes consuming 120 grams, even 150 grams, and now Cameron Worth did 200 grams in a triathlon race. How realistic is it actually to have the uptake?
Well, to explain that, the first people that I think they did the increasing from 90 to 120 were Aitor Biribay and Aritz Urdampilleta, the two Bax guys. Biribay was working with Ineos until a few months ago, and they did two studies with runners. Runners, and they did three groups: 60 grams per hour, 90 grams per hour, and 120 grams per hour during a trial marathon, which was, I don't know, if it was 45 or 50k, in a circuit. They were all the time going through the feeding station and eating a lot. And what they found was that as much carbs they eat, the blood test for the next day had less markers of inflammation and damage. But the problem was that passing from 90 grams to 120 grams per hour, that carries a lot of GI issues and vomiting or diarrhea. And I don't remember the exact amount, but a lot of percentage of the guys of the 120 grams per hour group had to stop on the racing because the GI problem. So they thought, what happened if we can train the good, train, just eat more in different phases with food, sometimes with gels or malto, dextrin or whatever. What happened if we can train as in the same way as we train running or in the bike, train the stomach and the gut. And they developed this Jochen Drupp did this before in 2017, but probably Urdampilleta and Biribay, they started doing the basics or the good training, increase the stomach volume, increase the amount of food, going for training right after eating, and then putting a lot of glucose or a source of glucose and fructose during training, and in that way afterwards they did like the same experiment, and all the people with 120 grams per hour was been training the gut, they didn't suffer any problems. This is I think it's a very, very interesting study, those studies. And with this, I think all the 120 grams per hour, thing starts.
And this, I mean, like, if I calculate nutrition, I mean, the biggest problem for me is the osmolarity, yeah, and the amount of water, so that it still stays isotonic and not in another way. So how to actually work with that? Or is it really a fixed number? I mean, like, we have this two or maybe three studies. Yeah, we have the one from Jorgendrup, the old one with the 90 grams, Pogodla with 120 grams. But is there actually a limit? Yeah, can we really absorb 200 grams? And how do we deal with the osmolarity? I mean, like, drinking 2 liters of water is maybe not the best solution.
To start, I think I need to explain first what is osmolarity.
Yes, yeah? Please.
Because osmolarity is the amount of particles that you have in the solution. You put 10 molecules of glucose in 1 liter, that osmolarity will be 10 molecules in 1 liter. But if you add molecules of salt, molecules of orange juice, they have particles, you add additives for changing the flavor, you add a corrector for the acidity, you start putting a lot of things into the water that increases a lot the osmolarity. So, sorry for the nutrition brands, but when you start putting a lot of things into the liquid, the osmolarity increases because it's particles in a liquid, and is when you start having problems. I try to do very, very, when I do like a solution for drinking during the bike, try to keep it very simple with maltodextrin or a source of glucose, which is a few particles, a source of fructose, and just salt. Don't add in any additives, any flavoring, anything, because the osmolarity increases, and then is when the stomach and the gastrointestinal tube don't want a lot of things just coming in and pushes water outside. This is what. So sorry for being too long in the question.
No, absolutely right. Please, this is more or less often my problem, that I'm just like using words that, of course, I know, but the listeners most of the time don't know. But very good explanation. Thanks a lot.
So as if you keep the solution as simple as possible, I don't really know the amount, but with some of the athletes that I work, they can put 180 grams per hour. Big guys, 80 kilos. Even very small guys of 60 or under 60, they can put 120, 150 with low osmolarity solutions. I think the simple is the solution that you take in, as more possibilities that you have. I mean, there's less possibility that you have to get GI issues.
I think we will put that online soon. I programmed myself a nutrition calculator, so mixing drinks with malto, the different kind of malto, so the slow one, or the with the high and low osmolarity, and some salt and some fructose. So it's a nice app for my telephone, but I think we will put it online soon. So if someone wants to mix his own drinks, you only need to buy a little bit of maltodextrin.
We have to apologize to the brands of nutrition, but the gels and the solution ready made are very convenient for the race and everything.
Absolutely.
But you can use brands and your own proper solution for training, and so is something logical,
So if you if we talking a little bit more about the gut training, yeah, if you're talking about a high intake, yeah, how do you establish that? How what's your plan? What's your way of training the gut?
I mean,
like starting with 120 grams already or 150 is maybe not the best solution. Yeah?
No. I divide myself I learned this from Aritz Urdanpileta in three stages, and this has to be done between 3 and 6 months, so very steadily. The first thing is to increase the stomach volume, yeah, so with maybe liquid or even food, yeah. The second step will be to fasten the empty stomach, yeah, you know, the velocity that the stomach empties, increase that velocity. And then the third part will be, this is a hypothesis because it's not tested yet. We think that as much glucose or fructose or maltose you put into your gut system, the transporters of GLUT5 or SGLT1 might increase, and you might increase the variant. This is a hypothesis because it's not hasn't been proved, but I divide myself in these three steps. First, increase the stomach, then get better with the emptiness of the stomach, and then increase the transporter. When you're doing that, probably everything happens at the same time. But to be more educational, I do this in three steps. Yeah, first with food, and then with solutions.
Okay, the volume thing in the beginning, it's pretty clear. But step two and three, if we can go a little bit more into the detail, how do you the faster absorption, for example?
I mean, something very rude. Sorry for the word.
Yeah.
And very very quick. Just eat a lot. Eat your, I don't know, your lentils or your anything, and then go training. So, is something that we say you don't have to do that, but for emptying or helping the emptying the trauma quicker, you have to train. Just eat and then go out.
Okay.
First, so, steadily increasing the speed and the intensity and the amount of food.
So, I mean, like eating a lot, is it more, do you recommend like high fiber and then go out and train?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, maybe it's,
this can be disastrous.
Yeah. I mean, so that's why I say this process has to take 3-6 months.
Yes.
You cannot put two apples, a lot of beans, lentils, and you know, feed fat with meat and everything.
Yes.
Yeah, you feel like that, drink even wine or whatever, and then go out. No, I mean, eat a couple of apples and a banana, maybe some bread or something, and go out, and then steadily.
Okay, I understand.
Little by little, do two workouts of this kind per week, and then you can increase in your training, like training. You don't start doing FTP or critical power intervals the first day, probably.
Yeah.
You will take 3 months, 4 months. Yeah.
And when do you start with? It's like the third phase when you start like increasing the fructose and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, I understand.
Yeah.
Okay.
I will
first
do
the volume, then the faster emptying, and then the higher fructose and glucose.
Okay. Probably you can do it in any order, but for me, it's, in my experience, this is better, and it works, works. And for the glucose and macro, I will do five. I mean, if an athlete tolerates well 90 grams per hour with no GI issues or anything, in a medium intensity, the next workout I will add 5 more grams. The next workout, 5 more grams. So sometimes you need 2 or 3 workouts with 100 grams to go a step forward. And then up to 120 probably is all right. But if they are a big athlete, we keep a bit. So this process might take 5-6 months, sometimes 3, but it's a steady and a slow process.
Okay, I understand. So, yeah, as I told before, I mean, like, we are in a very lucky times that we have the knowledge now to eat more and a lot. And I think this also changed a little bit the perspective on training. Yeah. If I look, I mean, like, we all talking, or I mean, like, not we, yeah, but there was a big hype about polarized approach training, which I think has its place, especially in developing young riders. But if you look at pro level riders, they most of the time they are staying actually in tempo zone because of the races. Yeah. And for training, I mean, like, if you work with a time limited amateur, maybe sometimes with the high availability of carbohydrates now, you can even go a little harder. Yeah. And maybe riding tempo and eating a lot. Yeah. So,
yeah, yeah.
What do you think about that?
When I use your platform, you can see that probably the most amount of carbs that you utilize is when you are going in tempo and sweet spot, because I mean probably at FTP or critical power you will go upper, but you cannot go 1 hour at FTP. Well.
Different discussion,
but you can go a lot of time at tempo, sweet spot, especially high performance athlete. So in those workouts with a lot of tempo or sweet spot, is in my opinion where the most amount of probably carbs, apart from racing, you can put, because you do very long intervals and you're. The machine, the engine is all the time needing gas. With amateurs, I would say if you are going to do workouts no longer than 1 hour and a half, you don't need really to put 90 or 120.
Yeah.
But depends on what races or what Grand Fondos you are going to do. You have to work on this or not. If you are going to do a 200 kilometers Gran Fondo in June, you might get benefit from eating at least 90 grams, which is difficult for amateurs sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. A few weeks ago, I think it was 2 weeks ago, we had a coach's corner, which is a very, very nice meeting of coaches here in Munich. And there were some guys from Red Bull and some professors, and Dan Lorang was also there. And so they had a very nice study about training intensities. And they did a meta study about that. And so more or less they showed that pro riders usually train most of the time. Yeah, or most of the time they spend in tempo training, yeah, and due to the races, yeah, and they are the fittest on earth. And if you talk to, for example, to a continental rider, they usually say, the first 120 kilometers or 150, I can stay with these guys, and then I got dropped, yeah, which is more or less due to the race lengths they usually do, yeah, because the continental riders are usually not doing that much kilometers in a race. And the amount of racing days is also something that is another thing. Yeah? And if I look at data from Tour de France or some stage races, I always see like, or Cape Epic, yeah?
Yeah.
You are like, oh no, it's actually a very long tempo ride, yeah? With a little bit intensity here and there. And at the last 2 or 3 days, the riders are not able to ride any more super hard efforts. Yeah. So it's really like getting the energy into the system. And the one who gets the most into the system will be maybe the best one at the finish line. Yeah.
And I would say that you will find this as well, that the mountain bike, the marathon mountain bike, is just the opposite of a road race, because the intensity, the hard intensity, is right at the beginning when the race starts, is very, very fast, VO2 max, and then a lot of tempo, and the road races are normally just the opposite. The slow pace or medium pace is at the beginning, and the very fast is right at the end.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
perfect. Very practical. What do you recommend for if you do like an easy training, for example, 2 hours, a hard training, 2 hours, or a race before and after training? Yeah, if you can build three scenarios.
I mean, the before, if you're doing 2 hours of low intensity, you don't have to just eat healthy vegetables or maybe a bit of bread or rice, but just normal, maybe 50. I would think, let me think, in a 70 kilos guy, probably with 50 grams of carbs from vegetables or bread or some meat or whatever, is going to be enough for a low intensity. Even if with amateurs, if they are not pro riders, in some cases I will do like fasting training, because you are going to put low intensity, there's no problem. With a medium intensity of 2 hours rides, I would say increase a little bit more or of carbs, maybe 100 grams of carbs, is medium. This of rice with vegetables, meat or fish, during the ride, I will follow the Asken Jochen Drup guidelines for 2 hour rides. It's going to be 50, 60, depend. And for the high intensity, I will prepare it very well, at least between 2 and 3 grams per kilogram for carbs, So for a 70 kilos guy, is going to be around 200 grams of carbs 3 hours before, so you have to go out with a very empty stomach, but as I say before, not only the previous meal, but you have to think in the dinner from last night, obviously, and then during the intensity, I will go for 90 grams per hour. If for a 2 hours, right? If it's intensity, and then if it's longer, 3 or 4 hours, just try train the gut and aim for 100 to 120. And then, as I said before, it's important when you stop and you get home, think in what are you going to do tomorrow, because the feeding for tomorrow's workout starts today, right after the training. I don't know if I've been clear enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, like, it's if you come home, and you did a hard ride, and you also have another intense session the next day, maybe not eating high amounts of fiber, vegetables. So usually you should eat something.
Sorry, I forget. For a high intensity workout, I will take the fiber away from the previous meal. So I forgot.
Yeah. So something that really runs super fast into your system. That is usually okay. So you are also a trained pharmacist, and now let's talk a little bit about supplements, because everyone is going crazy about that. I mean, there are some things that really work, but I think we both agree that 99% is really work, and then you can put in some supplements. Are there some supplements that you say are essentials for athletes that you really can use?
I mean, I will follow the guidelines of the Australian Institute of Sport. They have like a list of A, B, C, D supplements. Supplements on the A list, they work, they've been studied, they are 100% sure and secure and works. In that list is caffeine, betalanin, creatine, all the carbohydrates, with protein and that. So that 100% use it, especially caffeine. I think is maybe underestimated supplement especially for races, for long races and for long workouts, where the fatigue comes, and it will you will get fatigue later with caffeine. Probably creatine. You know that there is new studies with elder people. I give to my mom. He's almost 80 years, and the creatine not only is good for the muscles, because you can increase the amount of creatine and phosphocreatine and so on. Also for the brain, increases the memory and that. And apart from those three, which are 100%, I will recommend it. I have like a double vision, because when I get an athlete asking the first time of how many supplements do I have, am I taking glycine, am I taking BCAAs, or am I taking colostrum, or you know, magnesium, zinc, selenium, hold on, hold the horses. Yeah, we are going to do the nutrition well, the training well, the sleeping well, and then we will start. But if they are very insistent, intense with that, if the supplements are not harmful, I will probably prescribe everything, knowing that they will do nothing apart from the placebo effect, yeah? But in my conscience, I have to explain the athlete that only very few supplements legal really works, which are the, what I say. Yeah. I don't know your vision on this.
I think we are more or less on the same page, yeah? The things you mentioned from the Australian Institute of Sports, I mean, like, we all know that they work. I think beetroot or nitric oxide has a place, especially if I love to use it when it's colder. When it's hot, athletes get actually more problem, yeah, because the vessels are already widened. Yeah. So this, especially for runners, it's horrible because you really get a lot of blood into your legs. So when it's colder, I really like to work with that. That's more or less it. Yeah, and I think we had we still have a big craze on bicarbonate.
Yeah, I mean, bicarbonate, I like it really much, but there is a big problem with bicarbonate. Mm-hmm. I mean, two problems, I would say. Mm-hmm. First, that it cannot set well to your stomach. Yeah, you can have very big problems. There is some formulas which are in a Spanish brand. I wouldn't say the name, but this, they put the bicarbonate with malto and fructose mix, which is really good, and it sets very well to the stomach. Bicarbonate is good, yeah, but for multi-stages races, yeah, if the athlete doesn't tell me and they put bicarbonate every day, they might put 4 or 5 kilos, yes. 6 kilos in a week, yes. And I say, what the hell you done? And because we put all the things, all the calories out, all the calories in. No, I did bicarbonate every day, yeah, but I mean, the amount of sodium that you put in your system is 5 or 6 or 7 times more than you normally do. So the liquid retention, it will increase, and you take the skin folds during a multi-stage race, mm-hmm. it keeps the same, but mm-hmm. the weight goes with guys sometimes 5 kilos in a 65 kilos guy and in a week. And until I discovered that this, so when you take bicarbonate every day for a multi-stage, you have to take off a lot of salty products, yes. every electrolytes. You have to bear in mind that the gels, most of the gel, they have 200 milligrams, 250 of sodium. All the meat, all the everything has. So how do you take off the sodium from the diet? Because so what I decide is just to use a bicarbonate only in 1 or 2 days, special days when they have to I don't know, do a lot of intensity of, or maybe climbing at the end, whatever. Yeah, but not every day, because this problem of the sodium and the liquid retention.
Yeah. We have the same problem, and sometimes you really see that in the faces of the riders. In stage races, I only recommend it on specialist stages, and it's the same as you, trying to keep the salt out. But this is actually very hard. It's really hard, because also everything tastes not that good anymore, especially if you do a race that is in hot conditions. So it's not really nice. But what do you think about taking it in training?
Sorry?
What do you think about taking bicarbonate in training?
Well, we do it sometimes. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly how the performance will increase, but sometimes, because all guys, I used to work in another team, and they gave us bottles with bicarbonate. I need this in the third hour. With, I don't know, 2 or 3 grams of bicarbonate, which is not a sufficient dose for, with this product of the Spanish brand that mixes malto and fructose, I will have to try, because honestly, with the sufficient amount for the ergogenic aid, I haven't tried yet, but I will do, like, but I don't know what happened.
If you are 70 kilos, I mean, like, you, this is
like what? 30 grams. Grams, yeah? So the stomach we can moan, you know what I mean?
It's, yeah, absolutely. So let's go a little bit deeper. We already talked about creatine, now bicarbonate, beta-alanine. I think it's an old supplement. I wasn't a big fan of it. I was 1 year or some years I was a big fan of it, and then I was like, maybe we blend, or we more or less limit some adaptations. But now I actually reconsider and see, okay, if we really take it also in training, we actually maybe have better adaptations. As there are not really good studies about that for a long time now, especially long-term adaptations. But I think in the book from Rønnestad, they also say, okay, maybe in a long term it can lead to better adaptations if you take beta-alanine also in training.
Probably you can do a little bit more repeat with shorter recovery. Yeah. And yeah, beta-alanine, the thing is, because it's cheap and it's, it doesn't give any harm apart from the tickles in the arms and the lips, is cheap and it doesn't do any harm. Just, I mean, I'm happy with the using of beta-alanine during probably the whole season, apart from 1 or 2 months.
So now we come to another supplement, and this will be the last one. It's ketones esters. There was a huge hype about it. They used it even in racing, and then they discovered, oh, maybe we destroy our glycolytic power with it. Now it's more or less, and you see it's also in racing style. I mean, like, today is a really aggressive style, and the years before when Sky actually started with it was like really one tempo. But there's still teams using it more or less for recovery or in high altitude training. It's super expensive. What's your take on that?
That's what you say about the glycolytic power is, I think, is the most important, because what I found is with a lot of athletes, taking ketones makes them slower. Yeah, they cannot sprint or do hard 30 seconds, 1 minute efforts. They can maybe ride longer at easy pace. Maybe, we don't really know. But is that helpful in nowadays racing, when all the time is like very high intensity bouts of? So what I do if an athlete want to take ketones, I don't say no, but I will explain. I mean, guy, you are slow. It can make you slower. So with your glycolytic power, can reduce. If you are using it this for maybe recovering, there is some studies that says that increase the EPO for taking it. Well, we don't really know. Some studies for the recovery is better, but you have to separate it from the taking of carbohydrates. Is the logistics and the price is so that high that I normally don't recommend it. Some athletes, they use it and they say okay, but take into consideration that as I said before, we say your glycolytic power can be increased, and this is not good for racing.
No, if you look, for example, if we're talking about VLMX and stuff like that, yeah, if you calculate, if you separate your power in like three parts, yeah, the aerobic and then maybe the glycolytic power, and then some like phosphates, yeah, if you roughly, yeah, if you have like a 0.6 VLMX, you can say maybe you have a sprinting power of, or the contribution is like 400 to 600 watts, depending on the body weight. And if you reduce it by with ketones in a race by, and you are already maybe glycogen depleted, you can easily lose 200 watts. Yeah, and it's really interesting to see the riders are getting very slow. I mean, like the first year, when they were more or less available for buying. Some riders used it in the Cape Epic and we were like, okay, why not trying it? But they really had a hard time accelerating. They said, I can go all day long. And then after the second day, everyone said, okay, we skip that because we can't push anymore. Yeah. And I think the recovery and even maybe recovery in high altitude, this can have a place for... a pro rider, but yeah. It's so expensive.
I will add something for amateurs.
Yeah.
Yeah, with overweight.
Yeah.
It might have a site or a part when, because when you are an amateur and you have weight problems and you can train very little, the ketones, if you take ketones, you don't have to eat. I mean, you don't have to eat. You don't have the necessity to eat. It
yes.
Can decrease the amount of food that you need. So for losing weight for amateurs in a period of time, it might have his place, but it's so expensive. So just go for a keto diet for a few months and lose your 10 kilos and that. But fully agree with you. Increase the glycolytic power. So for racing is not nothing to do with that.
Yeah. So this is more or less it. All the questions I had, but the last thing, especially I also work with a lot of young riders in development teams. If you are a young rider and listening to the podcast, so what's your take on nutrition? What can you say as an advice? Yeah, what to do and what not to do. Yeah, so.
The first thing, and if you let me, I will forget something that afterwards
yes.
I will tell you.
Yeah, yeah.
The first thing is not to over focus on weight, because the young guys they have listened that 6 watts per kilo, and they do the calculations. If I have 60 kilos and I put 350 in 20 minutes, yeah, that's 5.8 or whatever, yeah. So if I lose a kilo and a half with that 350, that will be 6 watts per kilo, yeah. And many young guys focus on the weight and they stopping eating, not eating during working out, not doing strength training. And the first thing is not to focus on the weight, because the weight is only important for climbing long climbs, yeah, very long climbs. And if you are very, very tiny, you have to focus on putting weight, putting muscles, because because when you are on the flat at very high speed, as much you weight, as better you will be, yeah? So you have to find the balance between that weight, that the perfect weight doesn't exist, yeah? You have a range to 3 to 5 kilos of the season. You can put some kilos on right before an important race. You have to be very lean, but don't focus on a number, yeah, or yeah. And eat your carbs, and carbs training. Eat healthy, a lot of fruit, a lot of veggies, and where all the vitamins comes. But also complex carbs. Eat a lot of potatoes, bananas, sweet potatoes. Eat a lot of healthy, whatever is healthy, and yeah, eat your carbs and don't focus on too much on the weight. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, this is one big problem. I think today with the development teams, I think it's getting better. Yeah. Some years it was really horrible because even the nutritionist in some teams are really focusing on the weight with very young riders with like 17, 18, 19 years old. And what I saw was there were some talents, but most of them lost their glycolytic power and developing yep. the VO2 max. And then most of them actually stopped racing.
Yeah, yeah, because the nutrition.
Yeah.
So yeah, yeah, the role of the nutritionist for the youngster are very, very... What I forgot to tell you, because we left it one size, is I used to calculate the intake on the bike, yeah, by doing the kilojoules, yeah? So what I ask, because when we do a plan for the Caja Rural or for the Climatisa, sometimes some plans you see, in this point you have to take one gel, this bottle in that part, a caffeine gel, but I decided to stop using that formula quite a while ago, and I'm dependent of the athlete. I prescribe carbs per kilojoules. Yeah. So every 250 kilojoules spent, maybe between 25 to 40 grams. So if you're doing 1,000 kilojoules an hour, it's a hard hour, and you put 30 grams every 250, in 1 hour you will do 120. Yeah. So that's important. But I discovered your application for the Seiko computation, for the Garmin, and I'm using that for the past few days, and it's quite a convenience way of remember what to eat and not calculate. Yeah, I'm working 250 kilojoules. I have to eat 30 grams. So I think it's important to have a system of knowing how much to eat depending yes. on the intensity and the time that you are working out or even racing. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, like, we will, when you train or when, even if you train hard and you are not that deep into nutrition and science as we are, especially as you, it's sometimes hard for the athlete, you know, they already need to train hard, and then always keeping the eating in mind. Sebastian and I, we said, okay, we already have all the calculations there behind that for many, many years. I mean, like, we have it like for 10 years now, yeah, or even longer. Yeah? I even had for like 12 years. So we thought about, okay, why not putting it on a Garmin? We will even make it a little bit better. Yeah. So to see also something, have like a button on it and pressing how much carbs you took in. And also maybe a warning sign if you have like a high carb intake, and also if you maybe plan a training, on Training Peaks or whatever, that we already can calculate how much grams of carbohydrates will this training actually need, and we can recommend if you really like the training how it should be. This is also another thing.
For another podcast.
That we really can say, okay, maybe you should take a lot of carbohydrates now, because in 30 minutes the intensity starts. So, and that we really are, don't take it during the interval, so take it before, so that we have more or less a timed carb intake during the ride. And the rider only needs to, like, something is beeping on my Garmin. Okay, it says, like, take 60 grams now, and then 15 minutes later or 20 minutes later, 60 again. And then to make it a little bit more easier and convenient, but for now I think it's I really love it. I always, when I'm riding, I'm very happy. I have my little bag on my handlebar with some this is not good advice, to be honest. I have always some wine gums there, and I know one wine gum has 5 grams, and so I really see, okay, then I see 120 grams, and they say, okay, now I can eat half of it, and so I'm just eating. The first hour, usually I don't eat, because I still have enough glycogen. But then after the first hour, I start to eat, and really see, like, if I see, like, sometimes I'm really doing like 5 grams. If I see 5 grams, I just take one thing in. Don't overdo it. Because there's a funny story. I think, I can tell it. Jamie Loden from Visma Leasebike, who's doing all the aerodynamics. He's also a very good cyclist, especially in long endurance stuff. He was doing this race along the Pyrenees, the whole thing. And I said, I don't overthink it too much, Jamie. Just eat some Haribos, and we can calculate that. I think it was 3 years ago. So he was eating constantly, and then his jaw and his teeth really start to hurt because he was chewing. And then he had to stop because, and he was in lead, So, next time...
He will eat just gels or something.
I also work with a guy who won the race across Italy, which is like 700 something kilometers, so crazy long. And I think the main thing is you need to have the right mindset to do these kind of things. And but it's interesting. We optimize him aerodynamically a lot, and we needed 3 years to really establish a good nutrition plan. And also training the gut before that, and high intake and stuff like that, and when to take caffeine and all these kind of things. And for a 24-hour race, he only ate, more or less only ate liquids, Gels and in the bottle. We mixed ourselves with some maltodextrin, a little, not too much fructose, because the uptake was, the outtake by the power was not too high. But it worked really, really well, And I think he even did it in record time, smashing the one from Christoph Strasser, the old record. But I'm not sure of that. But he was super fast, And so you can even see that if you're well-trained, you can even go 24 hours only with liquids, and everything will be fine. And the amount of kilojoules they are putting out, it's crazy, It's they're doing the work for a week, more or less.
Yeah, I trained also the two guys. They did the Traca 2 weeks ago, the amateurs, 36 hours. I mean, I don't know if people is very fan of TSS, but only just to make an idea, they did 1,000 TSS in one go,
Yes.
So, and I don't know, it was 80 or 9,000 kilojoules or something like that. So, it's, you have to feed that. That work, it's interesting.
It's really crazy. So, Raoul, thanks a lot for your time.
My pleasure.
I will put in the show notes some of the studies, also the ones you mentioned about the first studies for the training.
I will send it to you.
Yes, perfect. And thanks a lot. And we actually talk the next days and weeks, because we always stay a little bit in contact.
Perfect. Thanks to you, Björn.